This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Environmental activism across the globe, our young people are hitting the streets in the name of climate change. HPR's Noe Tanigawa joins us to talk about what's happening across the islands and across the Pacific.
Well, that's right. I mean, one Twitter post just said, this is what democracy looks like. I mean, the protests started over the Pacific today for the Global Youth Climate Strike. Hundreds of thousands of people in Australia, Kiribati, Mumbai, London, thousands were marching past the Houses of Parliament there. In fact, the Washington Post reported 13-year-old Londoner Martha Lichtman was saying, "Oceans are rising, and so are we."
That's amazing.
It's happening in corporations, too, which is kind of amazing, Catherine. 1,500 Amazon employees were planning to walk out today. They just want the company to be more aggressive in its climate goals. 900-plus Google workers, hundreds of employees, Facebook, Microsoft, Twitter. Companies are going offline or greening their pages online, Patagonia, Burton. I mean, a lot of things are happening. It's been 6 months since the last youth mobilization, and those kids have spent the entire time organizing.
It's just amazing.
What are they demanding? They're demanding urgent action on the climate crisis. And one of the biggest events is expected to be in New York City. It's already underway. Greta Thunberg, the young Swedish activist, is there. And she was in Washington this whole week imploring lawmakers to just listen to scientists and then act. Well, we've got a representative there, too. Kristen Brown, 17, from Campbell High School. She's Hawaii State Logistics Director for the Hawaii Youth Climate Strike. I talked with her earlier this week. I asked Kristen how she first went from being somebody who cared to somebody who's doing something. And she said her growing awareness took a leap when she finally went to Iceland on an NAACP-sponsored trip.
I saw the glaciers melting, like glaciers that were thousands of years old, and they're just puddles and just pools of melted ice that once stood thousand-year-old glaciers. It was heartbreaking to see it, actually. Those ecosystems up there, they've been broken and rearranged and torn down just because of what it is that humans have done. I don't know. Coming home, I had to do something. I could not just sit by and do nothing anymore. And so I joined PAC, Pacific and Asian Affairs Council, at UH.
Good old, yeah.
I don't know. It helped a lot.
Good old Pacific and Asian Affairs Club.
Yes.
I love it. Yes. They're still at it. They showed Kristen how global the problem is, and she went to a sea level rise summit last year and just got connected. Another story, Dyson Chi, another of the youth climate strikers. He's 17, homeschooler, so he said it was a little harder to connect. He says he cared, but was like, so what do I do? When he finally went to a surf rider meeting, it was a major relief.
After that meeting, I was like, wow, I can do something about this.
What could you do?
Like, I can do beach cleanups, obviously, but there's also things like advocacy. I can go out to the legislature and let politicians know what I'm thinking. I can help to move bills for it. I can approach businesses and ask them to stop single-use plastics. Or I can go out to schools, talk to kids who are my age, right? That's how it really evolved.
Now, Dyson's testifying, lobbying hard on behalf of two bills before the Honolulu City Council. Bill 25 to support more electric vehicle charging stations, and Bill 40, a more comprehensive plastics ban. I mean, these kids are amazing me because they're right on it with voter registration. And they're looking at a change at the state legislature as well. They're supporting an initiative to develop a climate curriculum. Can you believe there really isn't one? Hmm. And the other bill would establish meatless Mondays for public school lunches. We've got here Kavika from the, he's one of the major organizers. In fact, he is the major organizer with Hawaii Youth Global Climate Strike. He's here to tell us how important it is.
I think what people kind of just don't understand is the velocity and the speed of which climate change is heading right now. We need to put into action all of our resources to get this done. We need to mobilize on the scale that we did in World War II. It changed the country. It changed how people lived their lives. And we need that same type of mobilization now for the war that we have with climate change, right? Especially people high up need to understand that there is sacrifice that needs to be made for the greater good. But that sacrifice can only be made when we realize what the fight is and when we can get the greed out of their heads right? And get them to understand that they need to change their business practices, if not altogether, kind of completely take a 180 on how they've been conducting their business. That's the hard thing that we're still trying to figure out. It's how do we do that, right? How do we get people to want to change?
Kavika Pegram, youth lead here for the Global Climate Strike. Look, getting information is where to start. It started, that's how these guys got started, and they want us to get going on it. And it's happening all over the islands now. The Maui Climate Strike's underway until 1 o'clock in front of the county building. They've got all kinds of information and connections for you. Climate Reality Project is then going to move their Maui action to the Maui College campus. That's happening from 4 to 6. They'll be sign waving there. On Hawaii Island, it's already started up until 11 a.m. They're going to be working there in Kohala with a climate solidarity beach cleanup. In Hilo, they'll be meeting with the mayor, young people, at 3 o'clock. There's solidarity sign waving from 3 to 6 there in front of the Kamehameha statue. And in Kona, same thing, sign waving on Kuinka'ahumanu Highway 4 to 6. Here on Oahu, it's big. Today, 4 to 6, these young people are gathering from Governor's Mansion to the State Capitol, then they'll be moving to City Hall. And this is all in support of the knowledge that our house is on fire, and they just want to sound the alarm.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know I happened to catch something on 60 Minutes. So it was an interview with that young Swedish girl, and it was very powerful.
Really? What did you make of it?
She was just strong-minded, clear, concise. You know, and it's listen to the scientists, listen to the science, and this is our world. You know, we need to care and we need you to take action.
You know, she's on the autism spectrum, and she said that it has helped her to focus on this. And she's helping everybody to focus, really. And of course, these actions around the world are in advance of the United Nations Climate Action Summit, which is going to be going on next week. Global leaders are going to meet basically to assess the world's chances of averting disaster without U.S. engagement on this subject. President Trump is not expected to attend the summit. The U.S. delegation will be led by Andrew Wheeler, a former coal company lobbyist. He is now the administrator of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Yeah, it's real interesting to see their reaction. I think people are feeling the change. You're feeling the heat. Like you said, the earth's on fire.
Exactly. You know, just the idea that Kavika put forward, that it really will take a World War II-style mobilization. I mean, that's what these kids are saying to us. And I don't think people are going to be too sympathetic in the future when we say that for 50 years, we just weren't really sure it was happening. Well, at least that's what the kids are telling us these days.
Yeah.
And if you want to follow all the action on social media, there are a lot of hashtags for you to check out. School Strike for Climate, Climate Strike. You can hashtag Global Climate Strike or hashtag Strike With Us. Fridays for Future is the long time effort that these students have been doing, where they strike on Fridays. And, you know, they even introduced a new idea to me, artivism.
Oh, there you go.
Hey, I'm going to have to look at that a little more closely.
All right. Thanks so much, Noe. We've been talking with HPR's Noe Tanigawa about the youth climate strike happening today. This is The Conversation on statewide, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your Aloha Friday quiz. In today's backyard quiz, we're looking for a Hawaii broadcast legend. Originally from Walla Walla, Washington, he was a radio personality before becoming the first person in Hawaii to appear on TV. He made his debut on December 1st, 1952, where he announced Hello, everybody. Welcome to the first official broadcast of KGMB-TV. He hosted a daily variety show from 1954 to 61 with guests including Elvis and Liberace. At times, he teamed up for good fun hijinks with the late Honolulu Advertiser columnist Bob Krause, once sailing on a raft down the Alawai to satirically prove that yachts at the Alawai small boat harbor originated from Kapahulu. On another occasion, the two walked around Oahu with the clothes on their back and a mule, relying on local hospitality for food and shelter. In his later years, he was the president and CEO of Trade Publishing Company in Kalihi. He's known by his nickname, which means right on the ball in Olelo, Hawaii. In today's quiz, can you name this TV star? Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets a reusable tote bag that tells people you got it right.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors The Rice Partnership, Kaiser Permanente, and PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training.
In a world where self-driving cars rule the road, antibiotics no longer work, and the internet has been knocked out, how will humanity survive? I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, we imagine the future under these not-so-distant sci-fi disasters. All on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Starting this afternoon at 1.
Hawaii Modernism gets the spotlight as a national architectural group gathers for a conference next week. We sat down with Graham Hart, head of the Hawaii chapter of Dokomomo.
Dokomomo is actually an acronym. It stands for the Documentation and Conservation of the Modern Movement. So basically, you know, anything from architecture to art to urban planning and landscapes, all of that was kind of done at that mid-century period in that, you know, modernist ethos is something that we're interested in. A lot of that is kind of reaching that point now where it's, you know, 50 years old, and so it's becoming historic, and a lot of it's going, you know, unnoticed and gets demolished quickly. So we're trying to educate people and be kind of conservationists and advocates for these pieces of art and architecture.
So tell us about, you know, how long the Hawaii chapter's been around.
Oh, that's a good question. We're relatively new, I would say 5 or 6 years, maybe a little bit more than that, less than a decade, definitely. We're relatively new in terms of how long Dokomomo has been around, but we're also one of the biggest and most active chapters in the U.S. So we've got a lot of good base and a lot of big following here, and we've got a lot of great modernist architecture to celebrate. So
I know Dean Sakamoto, I think, helped to launch this here in Hawaii, and when I ran into him, he was taking photographs of Osipov's projects around town.
Yeah, definitely. Dean was one of our founders of the Dokomomo Hawaii chapter. And yeah, he, you know, is a great architect and educator and wrote that book, Hawaiian Modernism or Hawaiian Modern, about Vladimir Osipov. There's going to be actually 3 days of just Osipov tours. And it's a reoccurring tour. We're kind of trying to visit different places every day. And then on Friday night at the IBM building, which is one of Osipov's buildings, Dean Sakamoto is going to give a quick little keynote about the building and kind of Osipov and kind of the legacy of modernism here in Hawaii.
So where else are you taking the attendees?
Well, so just on that Osipov tour, every day we're going up to the Little Strand House up there in Tantalus. One day we're going to be visiting Bachman Hall on campus, UH Manoa campus. And then one day is the Pacific Club. And then another day we're going to the Goodsell House, which is down in Kahala. But, I mean, that's just one of the tours offered every day. We also have 3 others offered every day. So a couple of walking tours, Hawaii State Capitol walking tour, actually right over here by the studio in Pava'a, walking tour down here, Makiki. We're going to a couple of different residences. So Pete Wimberly is an architect from that period. You know, his firm was later became WATG, Wimberley Allison Tongagoo, is still around. There's going to be a retrospective on his work, but then also we're offering a tour up to his residence in Manoa and then a small house that he did across the street from there as well. So a lot of cool buildings.
Okay, so these are mainly for the attendees, not so much open to the public at this point.
Right. At this point, registration is actually closed, but we'll reopen it the day of in case there's kind of any last-minute people that want to join us. Most of the tours have been sold out, so kind of the more exclusive ones like Ossipoff tours, Wimberley tours, going to see a bunch of buildings in Kahala, those ones have been sold out. But there's still quite a few that have slots open. So a lot of the walking tours and then some of the bigger kind of bus tours where we're visiting more places outside of Honolulu and kind of driving around a little bit further.
I was fortunate enough to take part in the walking tour of Kapi'olani Park, and that was kind of an eye-opener because you got to see the spotlight on architects who were contemporaries of Ossipoff and may not get the name recognition like he did.
Yeah, definitely. The Kapi'olani walking tour was a good one. There was, you know, the Alfred Price Zoo entrance. There was the Edwin Bauer building there on the corner.
Oh, there were a number of his works on that tour.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of great projects all around that spot. And that was that's actually part of one of our annual walking tours that we do every year in kind of October-ish time.
And you recently did one at Punahou.
I think that one was primarily hosted by the American Institute of Architects. But yeah, there's a lot of great buildings on campus there, like Thurston Chapel, designed by Ossipoff, and many others that are kind of the period that Dokomomo looks at.
So with the symposium, who else coming?
Well, just of today, we have 260 attendees signed up. And we have 100 spots that were kama'aina discounted rates. And so those have all sold out. So we know at least 100 people locally, and then that means, you know, maybe 160 people coming from out of town are coming out just for this event.
And have you been on one of these symposiums before? Have attended one of the national ones?
I have not gone to one of the national ones yet. I'm definitely planning on going to the one in Chicago next year, and I think internationally they're going to be hosting in Tokyo also in September as well. So I'm planning to go to those, but this was kind of a learning curve to not only plan one out, but, you know, having never gone to one before. Yeah,
yeah, so kind of exciting, like,
Yeah, what's going to happen? What do we expect? Yeah, I think we overshot things a bit. Normally, it's not, you know, as many tours or as big, and we are doing a lot.
Okay, well, it should be interesting as you showcase some of the architecture in our Honolulu. Anything else you want to share just about the organization and the types of things that you're working on?
Well, so this is, you know, one of our, well, the biggest event that we've ever done. But normally we do a lot of different types of events. We have, you know, various social gatherings and things like that at historic homes. But then we also try to do a talk story series where we bring in, you know, architects and designers, artists, people that, you know, designed during that period that can kind of share their stories, because a lot of them, you know, are kind of going away, right? So we kind of need to document their stories and the things that they've done. We've also do walking tours quite regularly, or things we call doco photos, where we go and document historic buildings. So the organization does a lot of events and a lot of things quite regularly. We try to do something every month. Though we've taken the past couple months off because we've got this big one coming up, so we're consolidating a lot of our normal events.
Now, this year marked the 50th, I think, anniversary of the construction of the state capitol, and that was kind of a big deal with the time capsule that they opened and then re-embedded in mm-hmm. the building. What do you have planned around that structure?
Right. So one of the mornings, we have a kind of our lecture series during the symposium, and one of the mornings will be at the Hawaii State Capitol down in the auditorium. So, I mean, that's a great representation of modernism in Hawaii, and it's, you know, conveniently we're going to be hosting our symposium the same year that it's the 50th anniversary of the, you know, Capitol being built. So, yeah, we're hosting morning sessions there, and then also at the East-West Center, which is also kind of timely because that was designed by I.M. Pei, and I.M. Pei just passed this past year. So, yeah, great two examples to be sharing with the world.
And you are going to be also including religious sites, too. Talk about that.
Yeah, so we have a tour called Sacred Places. It's a bus tour kind of driving around Honolulu. And, yeah, we've got a lot of great religious structures from that period, designed by some of our, you know, best architects from that time as well. And so that'll be a kind of interesting tour to go on, definitely. I think that one still has spots on it.
Okay. So if there's anybody out there then that wants to see what modernism is all about, they need to connect with Docomomo.
Definitely. Check out our national website, docomomous.org, and there'll be a big button on the homepage, I'm pretty sure, that leads you to the symposium. And yeah, registration opens up again on the day of. And if anyone wants to come, they're definitely welcome. I think we're doing individual ticket sales for tours as well, not just the symposium.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with us.
Thank you for having me.
Have a great event.
Thank you.
That was Graham Hart, head of the Hawaii chapter of Docomomo, which is all about the documentation and conservation of the modern movement. AC? Well, Honolulu Civil Beats Christina Jedra has a story about how the demand of air conditioning could threaten our green energy goals. She joins us from Civil Beats Kaimuki Studios. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Catherine.
So I don't have air conditioning in my bedroom.
And it is yeah, hot. I don't either. I moved here a couple months ago and was surprised that, a lot of places here don't have air conditioning. And it really got me thinking about how temperatures are rising and more people are going to rely on AC. And my suspicion was correct. I checked in with Hawaiian Electric and they told me that in 1970, only 14% of residential customers on Oahu had AC and 2% on the neighbor islands back in 1970. Today, nearly 70% of customers on Oahu have AC, more than half in Maui County, and over 30% on the Big Island. So people are really feeling the need to get AC that used to be a luxury, but is very much a necessity for some folks now.
I am just struck by those figures. 68%.
It's a huge increase, yeah.
And then the breakdown by islands, too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, traditionally, residents built homes for natural cooling, right? So they didn't really have a need for it. They set up their windows to facilitate ventilation. They put in jalousies to let in the breeze. But, increasingly, that's just not enough. And then you put in fans, and sometimes that's not enough. So people are feeling the need to cool down. But it raises some concerns when it comes to energy demands in the environment.
Yeah, so why is it bad?
Yeah, so AC is kind of bad for climate change in two ways. One, it requires these refrigerant chemicals that give off greenhouse gases, and that exacerbates climate change. And then the second way that it worsens climate change is the energy demand. So the more AC we're using to cool off from a warming world, we need more sometimes dirty energy sources, more coal, that kind of thing, just more energy period to feed our AC habit. And it's just making it worse. So we're kind of stuck in this vicious cycle. Meanwhile, Hawaii is trying to transition to all renewable energy. So this is the increased AC usage is really going to be a challenge for us.
And the governor did, make good on his pledge to air condition a lot of our classrooms, our public school mm-hmm. classrooms. And some of those I know are on solar, but mm-hmm. I think people are cranking it up so that the batteries aren't lasting, I think, right?
Yeah, it's tricky because it is necessary. I mean, especially for our keiki and kupuna, you want to keep people safe and able for when it comes to kids be able to learn. My story doesn't argue that we shouldn't be using AC, but it's more about being mindful of energy efficiency. The state has this mandate to get to 100% of renewable energy for electricity by 2040. So we're going to have to be smarter about the ways that we're cooling down.
So as far as then what we need to do, I mean, I know that they're looking at redoing the codes, the building codes, mm-hmm. But that's an issue too.
Right. So on each island, there's been sort of like a trickle down of policy. There's a national code change, a state code change, and then each county's kind of figuring out what they want to do for new construction. So officials are trying to say, you know, we need X amount of electric vehicles. We need this kind of insulation for new construction to try to make it as energy efficient as possible so that we can meet our goals. This doesn't address old construction, and that's a lot of the kinds of homes that Hawaii had traditionally that are very open to the breeze. So there hasn't been a lot of talk on how to deal with that and how we would potentially insulate those formerly breezy homes. So it may be an expensive problem for some people as it heats up.
I know the Hawaii Energy folks have been really pushing purchasing, you know, more efficient appliances and things to kind of help keep people's bills down. But yeah, I imagine if you put in an AC, you're going to see your bills go up.
Yeah, for sure. There are ways to kind of keep, you know, your bills down. So a lot of folks think they can make it through the summer and just try to bear through it. But then they run to the store when it gets really hot and they get like the whatever's on sale, the cheapest window unit. Those cheap ones aren't necessarily energy efficient. Sometimes if you're able to, it's worth investing up front on a more energy efficient unit that will keep your bills down and also is, you know, better for the environment because it draws less energy.
Well, I'm happy for the trades and the rain today because it has been rather hot. And this summer, I know I traveled to California where it was 106. And when you, you die. You do.
Right. It's such a global problem right now. The International Energy Agency actually said increased AC usage is going to, it's one of the big blind spots in our energy debate. And, you know, people across the world are finding themselves having to rely more and more on it as the globe warms. So it's important that here in Hawaii we're talking about this and then across the world. You know, by 2050, the International Energy Agency estimates that the world will have 5.6 billion air conditioners. So that's 10 new ACs sold every second for the next 30 years. So it's important that we continue the discussion.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Christina.
Thanks for having me.
That was reporter Christina Jedra with today's Reality Check. To read her full story, visit civilbeat.org.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programs. Mahalo to contributors Ekahi Health, Ulupono Initiative, and Impact Hub Honolulu Co-Working.
On the next Fresh Air.
The King and Queen are coming to Downton.
What? As Downton Abbey the movie opens in theaters, we feature our interviews with the series creator Julian Fellowes, who also wrote the film, and with Maggie Smith, who plays the tart-tongued Dowager Countess of Grantham. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, following Science Friday.
Music Roots, a two-day music festival, explores those roots at the first-ever Kauai Folk Festival at Grove Farms next weekend. Check your calendar as we get a sneak preview. The rundown includes Taj Mahal and Peter Rowan. Well, this morning we have in our studio Matt Morlock.
Hello.
And Kylan Reese.
Aloha.
And Kate Ellis.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about the Kauai Folk Festival that's coming up.
And all the cool stuff that underpins it as well.
Yes. Yeah. So how did this idea get born?
The idea got born, at least for me personally, when I was a child growing up in East Tennessee, around bluegrass music, but with an obsession with African music and an obsession with Irish music and just realizing... even as a child, that all these musics were so similar to one another and history was so similar. And we moved to the island of Kauai about 10 years ago and noticed with Hawaiian music and Hawaiian culture that Hawaiians are just like Southerners, just like me. People always ask me, must be culture shock in Hawaii. And I say, no, the Hawaiians are just like Southern people. The people from California I'm having trouble getting used to, but the Hawaiians are great. So the festival came about just meeting people like Kailin and Kate, who are here in the studio, and all the other wonderful musicians on Kauai and on the other islands as I travel and play music, and realizing that we need an event that not only celebrates the unique styles of music that exist on the continent and here in the state, but also an event that connects them and puts these communities in the same place together. Around the festival, the folk festival is at the end of September, here in just a couple of weeks. We're going to have a lot of mixers and jams outside of the festival with just the musicians, so that by the time they get to the stage, they will have heard each other's music, met one another, heard each other's stories, and then are able to share them to the audience there at the Kauai Folk Festival.
I mean, you've got a great lineup here.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a lot of bands and a lot of individuals. People always ask me, I haven't heard of many of these people. And I say, well, that's kind of the point. We want you to come and be surprised, and I want you to trust me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got Taj Mahal, Peter Rowan. Mm-hmm. Kailin, mm-hmm. Chime in here, because yeah. There's a Hawaii connect.
Right. So a couple years back, I was blessed to be on an album with Peter Rowan. We recruited some of our favorite local Hawaiian musicians, Doug Tolentino, Jeff Aohoi, Uncle Mike, a bass player from Doug's Ohana. And we put together a bunch of Peter Rowan's original songs that he had written, inspired by this shared lineage, this shared genealogy between country, Appalachian music, and Hawaiian music. And the research that I've been doing over the last decade, which has culminated in the founding of the Kealakai Center for Pacific Strings, a nonprofit here, is dedicated to celebrating this shared common ground between these vast and deep musical cultures and getting together to, you know, celebrate through the joy of music and fellowship and camaraderie and good food. This festival is going to have a lot of good food. But, you know, the other person on the bill, Taj Mahal, I had a really good afternoon with him in Berkeley, California, my hometown, where he also lives. And he said, you know, man, I've been wanting to tell my role with Hawaiian music for decades. He said the first music that knocked me out listening to the radio as like a four-year-old kid was the sound of a Hawaiian steel guitar. And he was growing up, I think, in the East Coast, and he tuned into the radio and heard Hawaiian steel guitar. And, you know, the more you do this research, the more people you talk to, that's a story that gets repeated over and over. Peter Rowan's first instrument was an ukulele. You know, that's Matt, you probably knew a lot of people in growing up in Tennessee who played ukulele and steel guitar and dobro.
Oh my goodness, yeah. And they're still to this day in some of the old churches in eastern Tennessee, in the rural areas. They still have the choir singing, the piano playing, and the Hawaiian guitar backing it up. And still to this day, even in some of the African-American churches and things that you would just never expect on the surface. Hawaiian culture has so deeply affected continental culture, and especially the traditional communities.
And you talked about you did a paper once on authenticity the sharing that goes around in music.
It's the perception of authenticity is so delicate, because we want to be proud of who we are and where we're from. We want that to be real, just as real as we are in our bodies. And that is so, we so understand. But here we are with you, Ms. Cruz, from Guam in Hawaii, at a public radio station staffed by a multicultural staff, representing, you know, the Kailin's research, especially, and researching the late royal era, and especially Deva Kalakaua. And Honolulu, while we love the Hawaiian-ness of it, has always been a multicultural melting pot. Probably, definitely, I guess the state of Hawaii is the most culturally diverse state in all of America right now. And just celebrating this diversity, I think, especially now, when people are excluding one another because they're not authentic this or they're not authentic that, we have to realize that humans have been around for a long time. Culture has been intermingling for a very long time, and we're all the same. We need to reach out and embrace one another rather than building walls around ourselves and excluding others. And
so at this concert, we're going to hear bluegrass, we're going to hear blues.
We're going to hear, we have a huge contingency coming from southwestern Louisiana, which is a very intact French-speaking music and dance culture, the Acadian culture, a huge number of people coming from Lafayette, Louisiana. We also have what, to me, is the biggest surprise within Hawaiian music, and that's catchy music. These Puerto Ricans started coming to Hawaii over 200 years ago, and of course they brought their culture and music. And that music has been developing in Puerto Rican communities within Hawaii for a couple of centuries now. And catchy music was huge here in Honolulu for a while, and there isn't a whole lot of it around anymore. But Wali Rita y Los Kauaianos are going to be at the festival, and most people statewide think that they're the best catchy band.
Okay,
and
it's going to be fun.
We're selfish here on Kauai. So.
Yeah, well, I might have to just fly over to Kauai for this.
Well, you can be my guest. We'll maybe have you interview some of the bands for your show. That would be cool.
Yeah. So what are you going to play for us today?
Well, we've got a song. I just took a research trip across the continent of the United States and spent about a week in Buffalo, New York, tracking down the string bands, the Hawaiian string bands that went on to that fair and perform for 10 months side by side with Mexican mariachi musicians and Filipino orchestras, Italian orchestras. And the Hawaiians at that time introduced this new style of string band music that had come out of the community of Honolulu in the kingdom period. And it was a style that took the saxophones, the flutes of the Royal Hawaiian Band and put them together with all the string cultures that were happening here with the incredible poetry of the Hawaiian language and Hawaiian rhythms and hula music. And this is a song that we grew up in the bluegrass world knowing through the music of Bill Monroe. It's a song called The White House Blues, and it talks about the assassination of President McKinley at that 1901 Buffalo World's Fair in the music building of the fair, just a few steps away from where the Hawaiians were playing in the Hawaiian pavilion.
And you've got your guitar. Matt, you've got your banjo.
Unfortunately.
Kate's got her mandolin, which I just love.
all traditional Hawaiian instruments, actually.
Believe it or not.
All right.
So the White
House
Blues.
Let's hear it.
You're bound to die. Dr. Camerani took off his specs. Says you, McKinley, better cash in your checks. You're bound to die. You're bound to die. He jumped on. Washington. And then she whistled on down the line. On every station, McKinley is dying. Low to Washington.
So, Kate, how long have you been playing mandolin?
About 4 years, but before that, I was writing songs and playing guitar mostly.
Well, I'd love to pick that up.
It's really
you
fun.
You want to give a lesson?
Yeah, yeah, come on over.
We actually have one for sale right now, I think.
This isn't that kind of place, guys.
Well, now tell us about this two-day event. I mean, because you're going to have lots of things going on.
Oh, mercy. Five different bands. Or, I'm sorry, five different stages. Trying to find beds for over 50 different artists, sponsorship from the Maui Brewing Company and Kupu Spirits, all of the weirdest, coolest, diverse styles of food that we could find and vendors on the island, something around 20 craft vendors, nonprofit booths. We have a toxic sunscreen trade-in station where you can trade in
the bad stuff for the good stuff.
We're going to have things I don't even want to tell you about because I just want you to come and see it for yourself. We're going to have dance workshops, swing dancing, square dancing, hula, Cajun two-step dancing. We're going to have instrument workshops for ukulele, for steel guitar, for banjo, mandolin. Oh, there you go. And singing workshops. We're going to have a Sunday morning sacred music singing where we're going to be flip-flopping back and forth between Hawaiian sacred hymns and Southern Appalachian sacred hymns. Back, something out of the hymnal that I grew up with in Tennessee and then something out of the hymnal that you, the listener, grew up with here in Hawaii. Back and forth and back and forth.
Well, I'm going to have to drag my friend from Tennessee over there.
Okay. Yeah. The more Southerners, the better as far as I'm concerned.
And then you're doing all this Grow Farms.
Yes, at Grow Farm Museum. It's a living plantation right in the middle of Lihue, right, the county seat of Kauai. You can almost walk there from the airport. And it's very, very simple. It's a 110-acre campus that you wouldn't even know was there driving around on the streets. So we look forward to exposing the Grove Farm Museum as well. It's one of the really hidden gems, not only on Kauai, but statewide. They've done an amazing job preserving that place.
Yeah, well, you're fortunate to have that venue, and we thank you for joining us in the studio today, and maybe we'll see you on Kauai later at the end of the month.
I sure do hope so.
Ahui ho.
The Kauai Folk Festival takes place September 28th and 29th at Grove Farm Museum in Lehui. Tickets can be purchased at the Kauai Folk Festival website.com.
In today's Backyard Quiz, we were looking for the first person in Hawaii to appear on television. Originally from Walla Walla, Washington, this gentleman was a radio personality before he made his on-screen debut on KGMB in 1952. He hosted a daily variety show from 1954 to 1961. His guests included Elvis and Liberace. At times, he teamed up with Bob Krause of the Honolulu Advertiser, once sailing a raft down the Alawai to prove that yachts at the Alawai Small Boat Harbor originated from Kapahulu. In another occasion, the two walked around Oahu with just the clothes on their back and a mule, relying on local hospitality for food and shelter. In his later years, he was the president and CEO of Trade Publishing Company in Kalihi. His name, none other than Carl Heavenstreet, also known by his nickname, Kini Popo, which means right on the ball in Olelo, Hawaii. And congratulations to Claire from Kaimuki. She got it right. That's today's quiz. If you have one, you can send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Peters, Executive Artistic Director of Hawaii Art Space Alliance, spent her career in theater, most recently at Manoa Valley Theater. Now she's recruiting storytellers from across the state to participate in a play festival.
I was the Artistic Director and Associate Producer at Manoa Valley Theater for many, many years, and I wanted to move to the Big Island and live in Waimea, where it's a lot cooler. And so we wanted a smaller town kind of a vibe. So when we moved, I just wasn't ready to retire. So I decided I would just start a small nonprofit organization, and it's going quite well so far. Hawaii Art Space Alliance, also known as HA. And I needed to come up with what was my future going to be. So I decided that rather than doing theater, since I don't have a space, which is what I've always done my whole life is theater, that I would create some projects. So I've come up with a number of really original sort of creative ideas to bring divergent arts together to create something new.
So how's this supposed to work?
So registration is open now. Groups of performers can organize themselves, go online. Each person has to register. And then within that month, they'll receive a photo from a professional photographer. I have photographers across the state on every major island. And they will receive that photo and use it as their inspiration to create a 10-minute play. The photo will be blown up large behind them as their scenery on stage, and they'll perform in front of it. And I need at least 7 groups on each island for it to happen, but I suspect that's going to happen.
Have you reached out to what, high school groups?
There are a number of schools. I know Iolani School has expressed some interest. A school in Pune on the Big Island has expressed some interest, and also Lanai High. They're interested. But there's also adults and some families. I've got a couple theater friends that have children who are thinking of doing it with their kids.
And so how did you think to try and tie the state together with this?
I was on my spin bike one morning. I just kept thinking about ideas and how what would be really interesting and fun to do for people, and wanted to make it different and unique, and also without having a performance space. So that was part of the equation as well.
Share with our listeners who some of the folks are who have agreed to participate and use their photos.
Well, Lenny Morris, Richard Drake, Chuck Babbitt, Ron Gingrich, he's on Lanai. Patrick Kelly, he's a really interesting photographer from Kauai. Diana Gian, she does some really interesting work where she manipulates photos. So she's got some really interesting pieces. And all these professional photographers have donated their photos to the project, which is really wonderful.
So they'll have this strong image that you hope will then kind of spark the creativity with these theater groups.
Correct. Exactly.
Now, was this modeled after something that you saw somewhere else?
No. Although 10-minute play festivals have been done across the United States, and I also think that there are some that have been done here on, like in Chinatown and stuff, in some of those smaller venues where performers work.
I mean, there are lots of things going on out there on the art scene, you know, with the slam poetry.
Right.
You've got these podcasts where these incredible dramas are being created and performed. And these shows have followings. It's just really amazing to see what these young people are coming up with.
Yes. Well, I'm not young, but but I must have caught their vibe somehow, I guess. My hope is that this particular project will become an annual event. We've got a lot of other ideas. We've talked about, you know, perhaps paintings influence new hulas. An original song might inspire a 15-minute musical. You know, we could have an evening of 15-minute musicals. So it's taking, you know, these two divergent arts and ending up with a performance piece. So we've got a few other ideas, too. I've got some ideas about some historical figures in Hawaii, too.
So
they're all Hawaii-centric, by the way. Everything is geared towards being for and by and about Hawaii.
Do you have any themes going? Or?
I left it fluid this year. We've talked about in the future perhaps using the same picture for every group and seeing what diverse results come from that. There's a lot of different ways to move with it, so I'm hoping it's going to be something that happens annually. Right now I'm just remaining pretty fluid to see how it all, it's structured, but not completely structured yet. Structured enough that it can happen, but I want to see what people bring to the table and how it all flows together.
Okay, and what about the funding to be able to launch something like this?
Well, I've had a number of donations already, so that's really lovely. People can donate on my website, and of course we'll be making a little bit of cash when we have registration fees and also ticket prices when people attend the 10-minute play festival. But I have a development person who's out there working on getting funding. So as I said, it's open to all ages and all skill levels. There will be a winner on each island, and the winning production will be videotaped at the end of the evening, and then that will remain on my website for the year so that people can see who won on every island. And I'm also sort of supporting the performers. When they register, I ask for their photo and bio, and they'll be on my website as well. I love working with the actors, with people. And I won't really be doing that in this situation because they're going to work on their own on each island, and I will only meet them when I come over to do the festival on each island, one night on each island. So I do miss working with actors and working with designers and technicians, and I got to do a tremendous amount of that in my past, and I love the collaborative art. And okay. That's what theater is.
All right. But now you're trying something different, trying something novel.
Right.
And we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And then the website that we can drive people to.
It's HawaiiArtSpace.com. And registration is open.
That was Bree Peters talking about the launch of a new artistic competition, a play festival, at the Hawaii Art Space Alliance.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Bishop Museum's Spineless Wonders, Rising from the Deep, an exploration of marine invertebrates with images by Susan Middleton, opens September 21st, bishopmuseum.org.
Climate change is a planetary threat, full stop. But people got to make money.
We are teeming with fruit. Lots and lots of crisp, delicious fruit, perfect for making, I think, what England's becoming famous for, English sparkling wine.
I know, English wine, right? I'm Kai Rizdahl. Climate change on the vine next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6, following All Things Considered.
You know, it's diverse programming, and one of the things I like is that the more I listen, the more I was able to find different things on public radio. You know, their Saturday lineup and their Sunday lineup are entirely different, but it's a great way to multitask with both information and diversion as a part of the experience. You have a lot on public radio that keeps you both informed and entertained.
Member supported, Hawaii Public Radio. Radio with vision. Listen and see.
That wraps it up for this week. Hey, get out there and have a great Aloha Friday, won't you? You have an idea for a show? Call our talkback line. Here's that number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Post your comments at Facebook on The Conversation HPR or tweet us at HI Conversation. You can also find us on Instagram at The Conversation HPR. And if you want to hear today's show again or get a past show or links to more information, go to The Conversation page on the HPR website, hawaiipublicradio.org. Our program is produced by William Song, Harrison Patino, and Jason Ubai. The Backyard Quiz theme written by John DeMello. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday and pick up The Conversation.